You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 22nd of November 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we have a very special guest today with us, somebody that I had the pleasure of meeting at the last Patriotic Alternative Conference, who gave a very good speech there, and Radio Albion listeners will have heard of him from Republic Broadcasting, where he is often a guest on Dr. Patrick Slattery's show, and he also has his own show on there, Last Man Standing. And he's not an American guest, he's actually a British guest that has his own show on Republic Broadcasting, and that is, of course, Paul Stevenson. Paul, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I'm as well as can be, Sven. My show, as you mentioned, it's quite late at night. It's at 3 a.m. our time. So when I finished that last night, of course, I went to have a nightcap and catch what the news was saying. And unfortunately, another incident to grieve over and lament. But we can talk about that. Obviously, I'm talking about the incident in, you mentioned it off air briefly. What's the name of it?
Waukesha. I mean, what a name for the city
Waukesha.
Or the town. Waukesha.
Yeah, Waukesha.
That's where it happened. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely shocking. I think they said five people dead, 40 people injured. It doesn't look like it was Islamic terror. It looks like it was a black rapper. The police chief has said that he may have been fleeing from a stabbing, but it looks to me that maybe he was fleeing from a stabbing and then he thought, well, I'm going to get arrested anyway. Why don't I just take out my anger at the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict and wipe out a load of white people? And that's how it seems to me. And of course, that would have been stoked by the media over the last week, that's been talking about how Kyle Rittenhouse was a white supremacist and he should have been found guilty. And we even had the Independent claiming that he'd actually shot three black males, when it was actually two white males and I think the other guy was a Jew. But this just really highlights the failures of multiculturalism, because you have this conflict of interest between the two different groups in society. And this sort of brings me around to, you know, really my first sort of question for you, Paul, is like, sort of, how did you come to be doing what you were doing? Did you sort of notice that multiculturalism wasn't working? Did you notice that these groups had a conflict of interest, or what was it that brought you into nationalism?
Yeah, it was those type of things. And observing I think one of the things that really got my back up is not that we have imported a problem in terms of demographics and that groups are different, races are different. That's how nations are formed, because of similarities, ethnic similarities, cultural similarities, and the various things that make up a nation, and we've imported these different groups and different peoples into our countries like that doesn't matter. We've thrown the rule book out the window for this apparent multicultural, multi-ethnic, democratic utopias that we've been attempting, and no one ever asked us in these lands whether we wanted it or not. And I was observing the failures, observing the problems that were so unnecessary, that it were so counterintuitive to our interests. And I think what really sort of stirs, what stirred me and gets my back up, like a lot of people, is if that's not bad enough, that then you have the finger constantly pointed at you and the accusations of white supremacy, and that that you've been keeping everybody down, and that you not only should share your country, but you should be constantly apologizing for the fact that you're evil, essentially. When the reality is, people vote with their feet. People come here because they want a better life for their own self-interest. They want better education. They want to earn a living. They want a better moral society. They want more liberty. And then they come here and they moan about little things, about racism. And a lot of the times, these sort of racism is nothing more than might be looking at someone the wrong way. It could be the wrong little comment. And it's the double standard and it's the ignorance, because if you go around the world, I was thinking about this, you know, I think about it all the time, but if you went around the world, you know, I've heard someone yesterday, I think it was Sajid Javid. He's got very, very into the wokeness, and because he's normally not that bad. I mean, he's a very corrupt individual in many other ways, but he's talking about the race issue constantly. And he was saying, when I was younger, I was called a Paki a lot, and it's horrible. And it's like, well, listen, if I went to Pakistan, what do you think I would receive there? It's one of the most racist countries in the world. India is one of the most racist countries in the world. Israel probably is the most racist country in the world. China doesn't indulge in this nonsense and would not tolerate the type of liberties that other peoples enjoy here. So it's not just that they're here, Sven, but it's like they're complaining constantly. So it was observing these types of things and other things that got me into radio, and certain opportunities came along, and I ended up on an RBN doing a co-hosting a show, and then I have my own show, and I interviewed Mark, and ended up doing the conference, which is where I met you, etc. But we've imported these problems, and as I said at the conference, they were always imposed on us anyway, you know.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really interesting points that you bring up there. The fact that these different ethnic groups they come to our countries because they want this better life, and we were never asked about that, but our representatives invited them. And then once they're here, our media stirs them up and stokes up a hatred against us and tells us that the only reason why they don't have the things that we have in our countries in their countries is because we oppress them. And I don't think the people that are actually in their countries, I don't think they're against us. I don't think if you were to go to Africa and you were to go to somewhere like Kenya, or you were to go to Nigeria, I don't think you would be called an oppressor or a racist or anything like that. I think the Africans there would probably treat you very well. They would probably look up to you and think these are the guys that actually brought us all this technology and all this civilization. But then when they actually come onto our shores, they see the whole narrative is about white people being bad, and that if they go along with that, then they'll be rewarded for that. So they can complain about, like the instance that you pointed out there, they can complain about people abbreviating the word Pakistani, when that's what they do in Pakistan anyway. They abbreviate the word all the time. It's not seen as a bad word. And yet over here, they're taught that if they complain about that, they will be rewarded, they'll be given a higher position in society, and then our government will portray us as if we're just blaming these other races all the time. We're blaming them because we hate the colour of the skin. Well, we're not. We're highlighting the conflicts of interest that there are here, the problems that are caused by multiculturalism, and we're clearly identifying the source of these problems as being our representatives. It's our people in government that are causing these problems. You cannot blame the other ethnicities for coming here to, because we have invited them. Our government's invited them. They want the better things that we have here, and they're not capable of creating them for themselves in their own countries. And instead of helping them in their own countries, our governments just invite them over here. It's like we've allowed this divide to occur between our elites and our lower classes somehow. And that divide has got it's been worsened, and our elites are deliberately making it worse by importing all these different peoples in, because then they see it as an us and them situation, I think. And they think if they can keep dividing us by importing all this diversity and making it very difficult for us to unite upon ethnic lines, it's very difficult to provide a resistance to them. But I do think we have to be careful not to end up blaming these other peoples for doing what just comes naturally to them, because they should be doing what's best for their people. And the problem that we have is with us as white people. We're not doing what is best for white people. We're voting for people that promote diversity, and we're not just going along with this. That's the way I see it. Is that similar to your point of view on all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't blame people for coming here. I mean, if you're sitting down the street homeless and hungry, and someone with a 5-bedroom mansion up the street has got his doors open, and you notice there's all these other homeless people going in there, and that you're being invited in, then what are you going to do? But you know, then what you have is like you mentioned, you have this situation where the demographics are shifting. And you have these different peoples coming in en masse, and it's only getting worse. And then you have a hostile media, which is stoking up tensions so that those groups can be weaponized against the host native population. So you end up with, you know, the worst of both worlds. And, you know, it's not that I haven't given these things any thought. I mean, let's look, for example, just at the peoples alone, what you're importing and what the problem is and how difficult that is. Because if you look at the black population, for example, and you look at knife crime, knife crime is a big problem. But the argument will go, well, it's mainly only young black youths, and it's only 1% of or just under 1% of young black youths. Okay, that's all it takes to create the problem. You know, that's why you don't import that problem. It's not because the other 99% are fine and are good, but you do have this other problem of 1%, which is causing a huge problem with knife crime, which is costly, it's antisocial. It's negative in so many ways, and it's unnecessary. Why would you do it? It's counterintuitive to your interest. And we do this the whole time as well. You know, we support, our government support Zionist wars in the Middle East, and then in addition to that, and destroying those people's lives over there, that and displacing them. A lot of those people end up here with a grievance against the West. Okay, people say the vast majority of Muslims or people with these extreme views are good law-abiding citizens. Okay, well, there's a small minority who are not, and that small minority carry out terrorist attacks. So you can explain to the parents or the brothers or the sisters or whomever has lost loved ones in those terrorist attacks, and explain to them rationally that, listen, the vast majority of Muslims are fine. Okay, well, how about we just don't import, you know, this problem in the first place, and then the tiny percent that's carrying out terrorist attacks, it's not a problem because we haven't imported it.
Well, the other thing I think is what you're pointing out there is that it's the media that is really encouraging this, and they're stoking up these hatreds while at the same time accusing us of being the ones that are inciting hate, And the hatred is all being incited against white people. We can see the effect of it in this attack in Waukesha, and yet we're the ones that are accused of inciting hate when we're just pointing out that these are the statistics, this is the issue, and this issue wouldn't be there if we didn't have multiculturalism, if we hadn't imported these peoples, if our representatives hadn't imported these peoples, we wouldn't be having this problem. And we know that multiculturalism makes the problem worse. We have Somalian mothers in London who are sending their Somalian children back to war-torn Somalia because they're terrified that if they stay in London, they're going to end up becoming the knife-wielding thugs that are the 1% of their people that you were talking about there. The Somalian mothers are literally sending their children back to a war-torn country because it's safer for them there. They're going to be more likely to learn the sort of morality and the values that they were told that we had here in Britain. They're more likely to learn them in Somalia than they actually are in London, because London is multicultural. If you have multiculturalism, you have people with different ways of doing things, people with different languages, people with different body language. You don't produce oxytocin, which is conducive to community, and you end up with people not really caring about their neighbours. And it's much harder to harm somebody within your own family or to self-harm than it is to harm somebody else. So it's going to be much harder for you to harm your own people group. But if you're surrounded by other people groups and you're of a criminal mind, then it's going to be much easier for you to pick on those other people groups. And that's why you end up with more crime in these areas. So it's multiculturalism itself is not good for black people, it's not good for non-whites, it's not good for white people. But because the individuals concerned think, well, we can see that there's going to be a better life in that country, that there's higher wages and what have you, and there's special benefits for us if we go there, that's why they want to come here. I mean, the ones that are at on the Belarus and Poland border at the moment, I've heard some of the interviews with them. And they're being asked, well, why are you coming? Why do you want to go to Germany? And they're like, well, Angela Merkel loves us. She wants us to come over there. She's asked us to come over there. And you can look at it and you can think, they can see that when their people commit crimes, they get let off and they read that the newspapers cover up for their crimes over there, and they make exceptions for them. And you think, well, that, you know, they wouldn't get away with these things in their own country, but they think that Germany just wants them to go over there and wants to house them and wants to feed them. And this is the message that's being broadcast to them. And I do think part of this is like it's like a punishment, trying to steer us back onto the right path, because we've turned our back on our traditions. If we kept with our traditions and we kept with the original laws that the church had, we would have none of this. And I did notice in your speech at the PA conference, you brought up the Christian angle to all of this, and I'm a committed Christian, and I do think that if only we hadn't turned our back on our traditions, and because we had a tradition of no intermarriage between races, that the Bible tells us that the nations were created separate and they're supposed to stay separate, and God created the boundaries, and we've turned our backs on all of this, and this, we're now reaping the rewards of that. And the worse that it gets, you know, we're supposed to look at it and say, well, this is getting worse, this is obviously a mistake, this is a failure, we need to change things and segregate again. But we don't do that because we've got this multiculturalism. It's not us that are in charge of the media. We've got all these different groups that have these influences within society apart from our own. So they push for multiculturalism and they push for more of this because they know that it weakens us as the host group. So I do think a lot of it is because we turned our back on our traditions. And as I say, I know you brought up Christianity in your speech. Is that quite important to you? Do you see Christianity as also being important in our resistance to all of this, Paul?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, we've really lost our way in that regard. And when you look at the decline in morality, and when you look at the degeneracy that so-called progressives push, I mean, this type of stuff is not possible in a strong Christian environment. It would be unacceptable. But you know, gradually and perniciously, We've allowed it to encroach. Even the church itself has allowed it to encroach and not taken a stand on it. And as you say, we're reaping the consequences of that. It's a big problem, and there's a vacuum there, and because the nation has been largely secularized, and people are by nature religious, and they will find their religion in something, and cultural Marxism and the amplification and acceleration of it, which is now this woke thing, that is a religion to these people. It has all the hallmarks of a religion. It has its dogmas of inclusivity and diversity and anti-racism and all the dogmas that it indulges in. It has its priestly class of the celebrities, the Lewis Hamiltons, the David Beckhams, the Serena Williams who go around preaching to you. And those who don't adhere to the dogmas and the doctrines, they're heretics. Now, they might not burn you at the stake, but you'll lose a job. You'll lose friends. You could be thrown in prison for not adhering to the doctrine. So the void has been filled by those other degenerate, satanic type ideologies and religions. And it's not only that, the climate change is a way for people to exercise their religious zeal. So it's been filled with all sorts of abominations, quite frankly. And it is a big problem. And you can never be dogmatic about these things because, the scriptures talk about, when you look at ancient Israel, more often than not, when they were judged by being invaded by other peoples. We don't have a scripture to say that the West, as a result of turning its back on the Lord, and it's not just turning its back on the Lord, it's a despising of the Lord. It's a hatred of the Lord. It's a hatred of what Christianity is. We don't have a scripture to say that because of that, we are now finding ourselves being plundered. But it's not that big a stretch to at least be open-minded to the fact that that's a possibility. And I know that's it's a very difficult concept for people who are not Christians, but are still nationalists to even consider. But I think it's something worth considering. And again, it's not something I'm going to be dogmatic about, but it seems to me it's a distinct possibility,
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of lessons like that in the Bible, and Israel was punished with these other countries coming in and invading when they turned their back on the Lord, and that is exactly what we see happening to us now. And I think you're right there with this void, and it's been filled with this anti-religion, and the people that speak out against it, they're seen as the heretics, and this demoralization of our people that has occurred with it, and the weakening of our morals, and the promotion of homosexuality to children, the promotion of transgenderism to children, and you think, well, these other groups that are here, but they have religions. Islam is against that, and Judaism is nominally against that, and you could say Hinduism is nominally against that. So why does it get promoted here? Well, the answer is because it weakens us. It weakens the host group. All these groups, all these extended kinship groups, are competing together for power and influence, and when they're within their own countries, it plays out on the world stage, and each country is pushing in the direction that is best for its country. And you'll find that there are laws against this in India, there are laws against this in Pakistan, and the countries are pushing in the same direction. When you have multiculturalism, you have all these different groups pulling in all these different directions, and it's of benefit to your group if you can weaken the other group. So, of course, they're going to go along with this. They're going to promote these liberal ideas. They're going to say, oh, yes, it's great. Yes, let's have gay marriage in Britain. Yes, let's teach transgenderism to the children, because they know that's going to weaken the nation. It's going to weaken the bonds between men, and men need to be able to bond to form a resistance. It's going to weaken family bonds when you get children that are taught that homosexuals can be married and that they can change their gender. And the family is the smallest unit of the nation. If you can break the family up and split the family up, then the nation itself is going to be split up, and it's not going to be able to provide any resistance to this. So I think this is the reason why this is promoted by these other groups, because it helps to weaken us. And you can't blame them for doing it either, because, you know, in actual fact, they're doing the right thing. They're doing what's best for their group. They're fighting for their group by doing this. We're not fighting for our group because we're going along with it. We've fallen for it because we turned our back on our traditions, which kept us on the straight and narrow, which told us that what was moral and what was not. And once we've decided, well, we don't need to listen to our ancestors anymore. We don't need to listen to our traditions. We don't need to listen to God. We can go our own way. We've got humanism now, and we can change these ancient laws because we can't see what the negative effect is going to be. And this is what's all been brought on our heads, and it's all being encouraged by these other groups because it's to their benefit. Again, it brings me to this point. You know, we can't blame these other groups for what they're doing. The fault lies with our group, within white people, for not resisting against it. And I think now we are starting to see a proper resistance, a resistance that's based on positive ethnocentrism, which is based around community building. I think Patriotic Alternative have got it exactly right. You know, doing all these things to encourage us to produce community bonds and strengthening our friendships, and then at the same time also going out and doing these flash mob protests and putting banners up and getting the word out about what's happening, but not you know, not having fights with other groups, trying to avoid all that sort of thing with Antifa, and trying to be as positive as we can in our message. And I think this is, you know, this is the solution to it. And I also think we need to look at what these other groups are doing and how they compete, because they're competing in ways that are in tune with their nature. Like one particular group, they use the media a lot, and that's because they're very good at media. And I think what we're good at as white people is finding equitable solutions, finding solutions that benefit everyone. And I think this is the way that we need to look at our struggle here, and we need to think, well, we know what we want. We know what is best for us. How can we achieve that without it negatively impacting on these other groups as well? And that's the way that I think we need to look at this. So we can say, well, voluntary repatriation is good for them, and it's good for us. Helping to rebuild the countries that these people come from is helpful to them, and it's also helpful to us. And I did see a solution that was put forth, I think, by a lady, Michelle Renouf, which was about the foreign aid that we give out. And if the foreign aid was given with a proviso that foreign aid had to be used to build up the country that it went to, and in return that country would ensure that we didn't get any refugees from there or anybody leaving from there, that would be good, because that would be good for them, and it would be good for us. So I think this is the way that we should be looking at things, not specific, try to achieve what we need for ourselves, but also look at making it so that it doesn't negatively impact on these others, and then nobody can complain about it.
Yeah. It's a positive affirmation of our interests, and you know, it, rather than any hostility to any other group. Now, those other groups, by the way, they know that what we're doing as a group, because most other groups, the irony is, are more ethnocentric, and what you could put in brackets as racist, which is tribalist. You know, racism, of course, is framed as the most evil thing in the world. You know, but what is racism? I mean, every group, and again, it's the irony, white people have this, I would say, in a lesser degree, broadly, than, say, black people, or, you know, some of the peoples in the Middle East, or the Chinese, or the Indians. I mean, it's, you know, and India is one of the most racist countries in the world, and they don't tolerate. I remember speaking to a Pakistani I know, really good people. And I thought they were Indians, and I made the mistake of expressing that I thought they were Indian. Well, you would have, the sort of insult that was to them was incredible. It's kind of shocked me, and they put me, you know, they made sure that I knew that they were from Pakistan. But they know because they have this sort of ethnocentric aspect to them, that what we're doing is incredibly foolish, and they're taking advantage of it because our governments, in collusion with another particular group, which is pulling the strings of a lot of it, have made it available to them. And it's understandable they're going to want to assert their interests, but we've got to get organized to assert our interests. And those groups that I mentioned, they're more likely to be hostile to us than we would be to them. But I don't actually have any hostility to these groups. I live in London. I live in a multicultural society. I know people from Pakistan. I know people from India. I go to a local shop where there's people from India, and I talk to them all the time. On an individual basis, I have no problem with these people, but it's when the sheer scale of it, when you import the sort of numbers that we've imported, then it becomes a problem. It dilutes your own culture. It becomes a threat. It's against the natural order of things. This sort of stuff does not occur. Okay, there's little pockets of it, and largely of multiculturalism. There's pockets of it in South America, but largely around the world, no one else indulges in this insanity. And they look on bewildered at what Europe's doing. I mean, Vladimir Putin expressed this recently. I've heard African Christians express it and grieved at it, that Europe is losing its soul. They understand the blessing that Europe has been to the world, because there is going to be no Europe if the demographic shifts continue, because Europe will be turned into a third world. And there are those around the world who look on at Europe with tremendous respect at the civilization that we've produced. And they're scratching their heads as to how we can be allowing ourselves to be plundered like this, and the sort of problems that we're creating. But, I don't have to. You know, I'm not the type of person that needs to say anything off air that I wouldn't say on air or think. I don't have any little cheap shots or negative things I think about these other groups. They have their own interests, and they're different, and God created groups differently. And as I said at the start, that's how nations are formed. You know, the more similar you are to someone, the more grounds there are for intimacy and subsequently harmony in relationship, and nations get together like that. Typically, as I say, they have an ethnic, they have a racial and ethnic similarity. They have cultural similarities, which are made up of religion's a big one. They'll have certain customs and foods that they eat, and a dress sense in broad terms. And you put a border around that, and that's why that's India or Sri Lanka or Finland or Sweden or Ireland or England or whatever. And this has been, turned on its head with this whole multiculturalism thing. And the elephant in the room is that multiculturalism doesn't work. It's unnatural. And we need to get back to the basis of it. And I think we need to be able to get back to the point where we need to cut through it and start saying, Europe is a white continent. England is a white country. And not be scared to say that, because it's the truth. You know, you only have to go back 40 years to affirm that. We need to be able to say Africa is for black Africans. China is for the Chinese. So Europe is for white people. This is a white continent. Before the 60s, if you looked at pictures of London or Paris, it was just English people and Parisians who were white. And we need to get, start being able to communicate that message, because it's just the truth, Ben, you know?
Oh, yeah, it is the truth. It's like watching somebody self-harm to see what's happening around us. And, I'm sure that there are lots of people in these other countries that are just looking at Europe and thinking, what is going on? And we would probably have support from them if we were to say this. Europe needs to remain European. But I think unless we regain that connection to God and our traditions, I don't think it will happen until that happens, because that's at the root of it. It's this turning our back on our traditions. Well, this has been a great conversation, Paul. I've really enjoyed this. Do you want to just let people know when your show is on again on Republic Broadcasting before we finish, and where they can find you?
Yeah, my show is The Last Man Standing. It's on 9 p.m. Central or 10 p.m. Eastern, which is actually 3 a.m. Our time over here in the UK, and that's on a Sunday. I also do Beyond the Official Narrative with Richard Carey on there on every Monday at 6 p.m. our time, midday central. But I also do regular shows with Patrick Slattery. I'm on with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock on the first Monday of the month, which is 2 p.m. our time. Is it 2 p.m.? I think, yeah, 2 p.m. our time. That's Andrew Carrington Hitchcock on the Rents Network. With a guy called Mark Dankoff on the Dankoff Report. And I've got some other streams coming up. Obviously, I've been on Mark Collett's stream, PWR. And yeah, that's about it. That's about all I can think of. You can check out my Odyssey channel because I've recently set up an Odyssey channel that's just Paul Edward Stevenson on there.
Well, that's great. That's great. And Radio Albion listeners will hear you when you're on with Dr. Patrick Slattery, because we do like to repeat his shows daily. Well, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.